In a world filled with war, hate, suffering, and Justin Bieber, two guys fix it all with a battle about a movie. One film, two opinions, one coin, two sides. They feud. You decide. It's time for Film Feud.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Film Feud, the podcast where we debate whether top-rated movies should be top-rated. I'm Vidur.
And I'm Vikram.
Hey, Vikram.
Yo, Vidur, what's happening?
Ready to feud?
I am so ready.
Why don't you tell the good folk what we're doing here?
Sure thing. We take a movie from the IMDb Top 250 and we toss a coin. Heads argues for and tails argues against. So simple.
Simple indeed. And the movie we are feuding over today is none other than Quentin Tarantino's 2009 arguably classic Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, gali didi.
No. I said Basterds, not Bastards.
That you did.
And apparently Quentin Tarantino refuses to reveal why he misspelled the name. It's art.
Yeah, he came on one of the late night shows this one time and he said, oh, it's a Tarantino spelling. I don't know what that means.
Art. He's an auteur. But we shouldn't mock the movie or Tarantino yet because we haven't done the coin toss. So why don't we go ahead and do that?
Yeah, let's do it. So I'll be tossing the coin. Again, heads argues for, tails argues against. Let's do it. And I got tails. You okay?
I'm mocking you because, as I mentioned, this is a classic.
Ah.
And you're going to be against the movie. So I pity you. I pity the fool who has to feud against Inglourious Basterds.
Did you just go Mr. T on me right now?
Damn right.
I'm actually not that upset that I got tails for this movie because I have some feelings about this movie. Even when I saw it when it came out, I definitely think that Tarantino missed the target when he was...
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
There's a lot of things wrong with this movie.
Could have revealed that before the coin toss and suddenly all these factoids about your viewing experience are coming out.
I play it close to the chest, man.
Yeah, and apparently you do.
I'm pretty excited to watch it again, firstly. It's been a while since I watched this movie, so that's going to be fun. So why don't we get to it? But before we begin our episode, a quick shout out to Hubhopper.
Of course. Hubhopper is India's very own podcast app with the largest directory that brings you thousands of unique shows and stories from every imaginable genre.
You can now listen to your favorite podcast, Film Feud, on Hubhopper. That's Hubhopper.
So go ahead and download the Hubhopper app from the Play or App Store today. And if you like it, review it and share it with your friends.
Ready to watch this movie with her?
Oh yeah, let's go watch this movie.
Let's do it.
Oh man, I didn't want this movie to end. It's so good.
Really?
As Quentin Tarantino tried to tell his audience through Brad Pitt looking into the camera in the final shot of the movie, I think this might be his masterpiece.
Really?
Just might.
Do you think this is the best Tarantino movie?
It's pretty up there, and I think it's the best. And the reason is he spent so much time writing it, then casting it, and then just executing it to perfection. Amazing. Amazeballs.
Executing it to perfection, I'd like to refute throughout this feud, but just because he spent time and effort on it doesn't mean it has to be great. I think this is probably his bottom two.
Don't even try. You can't even name his bottom two. They're that bad and obscure.
Jackie Brown in this movie.
Yeah, well, Jackie Brown's definitely in there. The thing is, usually it's style over substance, and this movie is style and substance. That's why I like it.
No, it's not.
Hans Landa is the epitome of style and substance.
Hans Landa's unique, I'll give you that.
Aha, a concession begins.
Speaking of, let's just get into it. Let's just dive straight into it. Why don't we just start talking about Hans Landa?
Sure.
Or Landa.
Landa.
I'm going to be calling him Landa this episode.
Can we have a moratorium on bad Brad Pitt, Southern Tennessee accents?
There's so much of that in this feud, you have no idea.
Okay, why don't you just pick a segment at some point and just get it all out of your system?
No, man.
But not call Hans Landa and so on.
No. You can't tell me what to do with
it. You're going to rile me up over this feud with your bad accent.
That's my whole point. It's not my bad accent, firstly. It's Brad Pitt's bad accent. But we'll get to that. Why don't we just talk about Landa right now?
Okay, stop it. But yes, let's talk about Hans Landa, the best villain of at least that year. He won the Oscar for it.
He won Best Oscar Supporting Actor.
As a villain. One of the greatest villains of all time. The thing is, when your villain is a Nazi, it's pretty easy to make him evil. But the menace of this character, and then the comedy. He's like this weirdo Nazi detective who ends up ending the war single-handedly, and he's like super selfish. Oh my God, he's just amazing. Starting with the first scene of the movie, it just owns the movie. So good.
Okay, right off the bat, just gives me an opportunity to get my concessions out of the way. That opening act where he has that really intense monologue.
How I win the feud. Just
very impressive.
That scene.
Very impressive scene.
It's like 20 minutes long. It was around 17 to 18 pages. That's a short film, 17 to 18 pages.
Right.
And just executed to perfection. Also, that scene and Tarantino, that man, gave us on a silver platter Christoph Waltz. What a find.
It's pretty impressive. And just a quick point of trivia here. Tarantino originally intended Leonardo DiCaprio to play the role of Hans Landa.
Ooh.
And I don't know why it didn't work out. And he actually thought that his film was dead because Landa is such a...
integral piece.
It, without Landa, this movie is nothing. Absolutely nothing.
But with Landa, this movie is everything.
It's something. It's something.
Uh-huh.
It's something. It has to be something. If it wasn't something, then we won't even be talking about it right now.
The menace, man. That scene is constructed to perfection. It's just an exercise in building suspense perfectly. Because the way Landa first comes in, he's just constantly playing mind games. That's the guy. Constantly playing mind games. Just f***ing with whoever he's engaging with at any moment. Whoever his interlocutor is. Starting with a man who I think doesn't get enough credit in this movie, Monsieur Lepidit, the French farmer.
With his milk and his pipe.
His delicious milk, his three daughters, and his puny pipe. When Hans Lander takes out his big Sherlock Holmes pipe, it's too funny, man. In that suspenseful scene, to have that humor, that still says something about the character. He's still basically just completely displaying his power. It's too good.
That's true. I think that pipe was perfectly placed in the sort of situation it was. Just to be clear, my concession is not Christoph Waltz or Hans Lander. My concession is that opening scene.
Okay, that's
chapter one. Yeah, it was great. And it sets a tone for the movie, which, I mean, we'll discuss how it doesn't hold up. But that particular scene, the way it was crafted, the delivery by Christoph Waltz, I think that's the only reason he has the Oscar, just because of that scene. If that scene wasn't part of the movie, then his performance wasn't strong enough to earn him an Oscar.
No shit. You're picking the scene where he's the most prevalent that establishes him and it's 20 minutes long and saying that if it wasn't part of the movie, that's very much part of the movie.
Don't you think he's a little too over the top? I feel like if he tones down his delivery by like 20%, 30%, it would just be perfect. It'd hit the sweet spot. I'm sure that's how Tarantino envisioned it when he wrote it.
Not just that, but it's in character, right? His power play is manifested through his theatricality. So when he takes out a giant pipe or when he asks for permission, even though he knows he doesn't need to, right? He says, "May I smoke?" You know, that's part of the theater of it where he's ironically granting the other person power, whereas he knows that the other person has no power.
No, I'm not talking about the dialogues or how his character establishes himself in that scene and the movie overall. I'm just saying that Christoph Waltz's portrayal, because I'm sure it was how the script would have wanted it, but his portrayal is glaringly over the top, man. It's just, he's too ooh and ah and this and that, and then like all of a sudden he'll become the Jew hunter and like sinister and stuff. It's way too much. I feel like if he just like tones it down, brings it all together a little bit, it would just be the sweet spot in terms of performance. Since we're on monologues specifically here, I actually want to use this opportunity to discuss another monologue in this movie given by the great Brad Pitt,
aka
Lieutenant Aldo Raine. Who was his accent coach in this movie, man? I want to have a word with that gentleman.
So by the way, I spent $10 to purchase in ebook form the shooting script of this movie. And Tarantino, because he wrote it himself, he has like these amazing notes. I remember him writing that Lieutenant Aldo Raine has like a strong Tennessee accent, which clearly Brad Pitt took over the top on Tarantino's direction. Also, like the little scar he has on his neck, which is very prominent but never explained. And it looks like it's from like a lynching or a hanging or something. He wrote in like Lieutenant Aldo Raine has a very prominent scar on his neck, but this will never be explained in the film.
I'm a hillbilly and that's why I'm trying this hard as this accent. I need me some Nazi scum. Y'all gonna give me some Nazi scum. Enzo Gorlami. Buongiorno. Arrivederci. Arrivederci.
Jesus, dude. He has such a bad accent. And you know what the sad part is? for some reason, Brad Pitt hasn't been able to shake off this accent completely post-Bastards. Every movie he's in, there's a little bit of that accent always there.
Oh, really? He's doing killing Nazis in every movie he's in?
No, it's like, that's what I thought. It's always there, man. Have you seen Fury?
You're embarrassing yourself.
Have you seen Fury?
Did he play a gentleman from the South in Fury?
Go watch Fury. He Why? Did not, but he still has the same accent. It's unbelievable, man.
Each one of y'all owes me 100 Nazi scalps, and I'm going to get me my scalps, because then I'm going to eat me those scalps.
What the hell, man? What's happening?
I think it's excellent. In fact, if I could quote from the vernacular of this movie, I think the character Aldo Raine, and particularly his accent, are wunderbar.
Wunderbar?
Wunderbar.
Really? Lieutenant Aldo Raine?
Yeah, bro. The head of the Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, it's basically Quentin Tarantino taking a bunch of Jewish people and turning them into Nazis so that they can kill Nazis.
That's right.
What the Bastards are.
That's right, yeah. They don't drop into Nazi Germany and parachute into it and then hide in enemy territory to go and offer peace treaties, right? Or whatever Aldo Raine said. They go there to kill some Nazis. The Germans will fear us.
Brad Pitt annoyed me in this movie.
Brad Pitt was not even Brad Pitt. He was just his character. And Aldo Raine and the Bastards strike terror into the heart of the Germans, all the way up to Hitler. 9999999, he's freaking out about the Bastards. Everyone in the German army has heard of Hugo Stieglitz. It's just one character after the other. I will put my concession up front, though. The only person I think miscast in the Bastards, BJ Novak.
BJ Novak, Yurovitz, man. What was he doing there?
I don't know, it's kind of weird.
I don't know, man. I think the whole, that group of gentlemen they got together, it didn't gel too well.
What are you talking
Starting
about?
Starting from the top down, Aldo Raine and his gang of Apaches or whatever, it didn't do too well, man. I know a lot of people ended up liking the Bear Jew, Donnie Donowitz.
Donnie Donowitz, a.k.a. the Bear Jew, a.k.a. Eli Roth, famed director Eli Roth.
Famed director, right you are. You know, side note, like the movie they're watching inside called Nation's Pride?
Nation's Pride, yeah.
Was directed by Eli Roth.
I already knew that factoid.
Oh.
And the key to that movie is that Tarantino, through Eli Roth's direction, he's mocking us. He's basically making us hypocrites, right? Because, jumping ahead a little bit, you feel good watching the violence, which Tarantino's famous for, against Nazis. Because they're Nazis, right? In the end, when Hitler is being killed by Donnie Donowitz, I half expected to hear Kekelunga, just the brutal way he's doing it. And I think it would have been actually perfect if that, like, dubstep Kekelunga dropped right at the time when he was just shooting, like, 100 bullets into Hitler. But anyway, by showing us that violence and us enjoying it the way I clearly did, and then showing the Nazis enjoying Nation's Pride, a movie where that Frederick Zola soldier is just killing the Allied forces one after the other, he's basically mocking us. We are doing exactly what the Nazis were doing in that film.
Firstly, why did you have to bring the weakest scene in Gangs of Wasseypur into this movie?
Firstly, didn't I just blow your mind? Did you even think about this movie at that level? Not that I did. I read about this. But still, isn't that mind-blowing?
No, what you just mentioned was very self-indulgent. It was self-indulgent nonsense, pretty much like what this movie is.
Everything Tarantino does is self-indulgent.
Nonsense.
We just are along for the ride.
This movie was just, he's rewriting history for what purpose? I mean, at
for
the end of the
movie.
Day, there are like three separate assassination attempts to stop this German empire. They all succeed at the same time. I mean, what's the point of all of this?
Yeah, just it's a movie. It was a little redundant, I think, the assassination.
It was overkill.
But how can you say it wasn't fun to watch Hitler, to go all Ramadhir Singh, just riddled with bullets? That's fun while the theater's burning down. And Donnie Donowitz in that scene, Eli Roth, the look he has on his face is so messed up. He's like so scary, dude. Like the Bear Jew is scary because he's a Bear Jew. But Eli Roth is scary to begin with.
I didn't like his portrayal in this movie, man. I know they had this one, his sort of establishing scene when they've captured the captain or whatever from the German army and they're interrogating him and he doesn't reveal anything. So they summon the Bear Jew and then the bat and the wall. And then obviously it's long drawn out because of the suspense building and stuff.
27 times they rattle the bat against the cave.
Okay, whatever, nerd. And then they're doing it and then he comes out and it's so anticlimactic.
What are you talking about?
He just comes out and he's like, hey, Bear Jew. And everyone's like, hey, Bear Jew. And I was like, oh, it's this guy. This guy's the Bear Jew. Oh.
What do you mean this guy? You knew Eli Roth before this movie? This was the introduction of Eli Roth to the world.
I'd completely forgotten that Michael Fassbender was in this movie.
Good old Mikey Fassbender, dude.
I think this is before he became big.
That's right.
He was like up and coming and stuff. So maybe that's why I didn't sort of remember it. But in his intro scene, with Mike Myers, where Myers is playing this British general.
Yeah, it's a weird stunt casting, but, you know, it works because Mike Myers barely looks like himself.
Why is Churchill sitting in a corner like that? Is he like, has he been punished by someone? He's just sitting in a corner. How much time does he have? There's World War II happening, man. Do other shit. Why are you sitting in a corner smoking a cigar?
This operation ended World War II. What more could you want Churchill to be doing? Operation Kino, that's right. With Bridget von Hammersmark and Michael Fassbender, whose name I forget right now. The best part about the interaction with Michael Fassbender and Mike Myers is how ridiculously British it is. Mike Myers just lays out a plan to end the war, kill Hitler. And Michael Fassbender, typical British fashion, goes, jolly good, sir, jolly good. He goes and screws everything up, though. But in one of the greatest scenes, that long, drawn-out suspense in the tavern, in a basement. Who fights in a basement? Where do we go if we're in a basement?
He's like, it's a basement. Oh, it's a tavern. In a basement.
And so he was right. Yeah, the basement kind of screws things up. Mostly thanks to Michael Fassbender. He's a little cocky about his German. Like, he does all the talking. You have Hugo Stiglitz there, who was part of the German army.
And their main German interrogator.
And their main German speaker. Yeah. But no, Michael Fassbender does all the talking and he's just shooing away SS captains as though it's a joke and it's going to serve him well. And then he forgets to order the German 3 and that screws it all up.
What's the German 3?
I don't know. They say Z, don't they?
No, it's 1, 2, 3.
No, I'm talking about when Bridget von Hammersmark, the lovely Diane Kruger, another native German speaker. Again, apparently Quentin Tarantino thought she wouldn't be able to do the accent. He didn't know she was German. He thought she was like American because she was most famous for American movies.
Yeah, he actually wanted this one German actress to play the role, but she couldn't because of scheduling conflicts or something. So he cast Diane Kruger in the
role. Excellent casting, of course. And she just goes in the end when Aldo Rain is interrogating her. He's like, how did they capture him? How do they know? How did we get found out? The German 3. He didn't make this German 3. This is how he makes the 3.
Stop talking like that. Firstly, are you confusing the German word for 3 and 3?
No, I'm talking about a German saying the word 3. They say 3.
They say dry.
They say 3. The German 3. This is how we make the German 3. Am I embarrassing myself right now?
Kind of.
Okay, I can live with it.
Yeah, it's fine. I didn't know that Germans make a 3 with their thumb.
Yeah.
It seems like a way more convenient way to do 3. Why don't we do that?
Indeed, yeah. But actually, the fact that we didn't know that that's how Germans do it means that when Michael Fassbender does it, we don't get to know, even though the SS captain like
gives him a look. Yeah.
Yeah, gives him a look. So only on the second viewing, you're realizing that's the point where it's all over. But you as an audience don't know. So the way it builds, actually, we skip through that scene. That scene is so good. It starts out with such lighthearted, like Bridget von Hammersmark playing that game. And eventually it all ends with, say goodbye to your Nazi balls. I mean, what a scene, dude. He's like, oh, you thought I was good at tension building in the first scene. Take this.
I think the only reason that scene sort of works is the German captain. He's
amazing.
Holding his Das Boot of German beer.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it sort of feels a little compelling. Apart from that, in terms of the movie as a whole, right, what I failed to see that this movie achieved was that it doesn't suck you in into this world that Tarantino builds, which he's actually very good at historically, right? All his movies, especially the movies in the 90s, which I'm a huge fan of, they sort of pull you in and they make you feel like you're sitting there wherever a scene is taking place. This movie felt like it was just going by, like I was just noticing it, like I was just observing it unfold. The German captain is what did it for me in the scene, but he wasn't enough, right?
I will grant you this interesting critique that you brought up, where a lot of his movies, they bring you into that world. For instance, Reservoir Dogs, right? Where you feel like you're part of the world. But that was his opening movie. He was very much trying to go for that like indie vibe. Here, you are watching a movie, right? Like, that's why you're watching a retelling of history. So you know you're watching a movie. So it's more about watching the most entertaining movie you can. And that scene just ends up building a lot of tension because you don't know what's going to happen. A lot of the bastards end up being dead. It's like Game of Thrones. Anybody can die. So you have no idea what's going to happen. That's where the tension comes from. I love the German SS captain. It's just so well portrayed. I love his opening shot as well, where everything's just chugging along. And then he just goes like, might I inquire? And then just doesn't say anything after that. Just calmly walks over to them and begins his like subtle Hans Landa-like interrogation. As the scene ends and Michael Fassbender has been made, that's when he eventually switches to English. The SS captain says, we both know we're not getting out of here. And then he switches to English. He's like, well, old boy, if this is it, I hope you don't mind if I go out speaking the kings.
I'm so glad we're nearing the end of that sequence, I knew you were going to just make it so jizzable and jizz-worthy and how extremely well shot that sequence was. I didn't think so at all, man. And just Brad Pitt just butting in with his Brad Pitt accent, just killing everything, dude. Can we move on?
Sure, we can move on.
Yeah, let's move on to Shoshana, if you don't mind.
Of course.
A big character in this movie. She has a big part to play.
She is. She's
like one of the three people who have an assassination attempt.
She's like the, you know, in a sitcom, you always have the A plot, the B plot, the C plot. She's pretty much like the C plot, maybe somewhere between B and C. And,
okay.
And just like a sitcom, all the plots like interact at the end of the episode. You know, like a Seinfeld or Friends. Uh-huh. This is like that.
Okay.
So all the three assassination attempts, there's two, by the way, I think, they all come together.
But by three attempts, I mean Landa's also betrayal.
Oh, that's true, that's
true. So there are like three basically factors or forces against Nazis in this movie. What I have a problem with specifically Shoshana's character, and it made me realize that this was true for the movie overall, is that there's no character that's fleshed out in this movie. I have a big problem with that. Even Shoshana, right? She's shown, obviously, in the intro scene running away where Hans Landa doesn't shoot her for whatever reason.
He aims at her and the tension builds. And then he doesn't shoot her and he yells, wow. Au revoir, Shoshana, which
genius.
I always found weird.
Genius. Why didn't he just shoot her?
She's too far. She's just gone. Au revoir.
Right. And he has these dudes and he has these trucks and they're just going through the village killing Jews, but he can't send. Never mind. I don't even care. I want to move on. Okay. Why aren't characters fleshed out in this movie? A new chapter starts. She shows up. She goes out to lunches and dinners with Frederick Holla. They fail to show how she has that theater, why she's doing what she's doing.
You don't need to know those things. Why not? They actually tell how she has the theater.
No, she tells Hans Landa that it was her aunt and uncle's, Mr. and Mrs. Mimu.
Oh, actually, maybe I'm confusing it with a shooting script where they actually flesh out how she used to run this like Mimi's theater or something like that.
Oh.
And she used to be an assistant and a projectionist. She basically was a worker, a projectionist. That's how she knows how to handle the projector. And then like this Mimi dies. Or I think Mimi ends up being a Jew and gets taken away because they're in France. Something like that. I remember it. But it doesn't matter.
Interesting.
It's cut because it doesn't matter.
All of a sudden, she has these motives. She's sucked into this world where she's interfacing with Landa, she's interfacing with Goebbels. All of a sudden, these guys are showing that movie or the premiere of that movie in her theater.
Wait. You're moving way too fast. The one scene that establishes maybe not her character as a whole, but at least what she's going through as just a victim of the Holocaust, is the scene where she has strudel with Hans Landa. She's like freaking out. I think she like pisses her pants basically, right? And then after that, she just goes back. Her anger towards Landa and obviously the entire German occupation gets reinvigorated. And then she comes up with this plan to completely kill off the entire German high command along with her boyfriend who's black. So you can get to know more about her character through that as well. And then the way she like turns away or manipulates Daniel Brühl. So you don't need to know what she was like before, but you can see the arc and the journey she goes through. And the fact that you saw her running away, you do know what she was like before. You know, like, what she's been through.
But that's my problem with this movie. It's so crisscross. It's so unevenly paced, right? There are scenes that move slowly and try to dig as deep as possible within that setting. There are scenes that just move so fast. That scene where they project her face in the smoke, the revenge of the giant face.
Yeah, I don't know why it's called that. There's probably some reason to it. I felt maybe it had an allusion to Big Brother, maybe, you know, because it felt like very, very Big Brother-y.
And then she's giving that, ha ha ha, I'm here to kill you bitches. And then obviously Donnie Donowitz and the other Dominic DeCoco, I don't even know that guy's name.
Can we just talk about that? I know you're ranting right now and like very anti-Shoshana and like not enjoying the smoke projection. But the scene right before that, Dominic DeCoco, Antonio Margheriti.
That scene would have been great, except there was Brad Pitt trying to do an Italian accent.
Isn't that
in his Tennessee accent, which
exactly.
It was so bad. Enzo Gorlami. Buongiorno. Arrivederci. Arrivederci. Arrivederci.
Your bad impression of him doing a bad impression, even that's cracking me up. That's how funny the scene is. And knowing that Hans Landa knows who he is and is just completely entertaining this farce. By the way, he literally burned down a theater and these people were actually in it and it got like super hot. The people said like 15 more seconds, these guys would have had second degree burns.
Typical, man. And even if people would have gotten hurt, he would just been like, yeah, it's for the art.
Yeah, it's art. I mean, a tour.
Yeah. I kill people for art, for natural reactions.
I grant you that he shouldn't do that. Yeah, that's true.
That scene's it's the climax of the movie, right? It's everything coming together. There's Hans Landa negotiating with the U.S. general on one side. There's Donnie Donowitz and little boy Donnie Donowitz shooting Nazis. And then there's the theater burning down. So it's the climax. And all of it coming together is so anticlimactic, man. Tarantino tries to do these scenes where he tries to show things which are larger than life, like a big face looking over you, telling you that you're all the scum of the earth and then you're going to die. Incidentally, they are getting riddled with bullets just from one of the top stall thingamajigs. I didn't get closure, man.
It was a mix of a climax happening on one side with the Kehke Lunga Hitler killing smokescreen Shoshana and the anti-climax on the other side, which, by the way, was such a crazy twist. Like, nobody talks about that, but Hans Landa betraying the German high command, it's a great twist. And that's the anti-climax. Like, all this stuff was leading up to it. And to your point, there were multiple, possibly redundant, coincidental assassination attempts happening at the same time. Because also, if the German high command is all gathering to watch a movie, there's going to be multiple assassination attempts. I'm not surprised. Like, there should be like 10. Everybody should be taking that opportunity to actually get rid of all these people at the same time. And then on the other side, Hans Landa is doing something very anticlimactic. And really, if Shoshana's whole arc hadn't happened, you would claim that it's redundant, then we would not have had an exciting climax. Instead, we have both going on at the same time. That's a feature, not a bug.
Ooh, that's a bingo!
Jackass. Toh charades khel raha hai yahan pe banda.
And it makes sense that he turns because he's smart. It's not like he's a Nazi. The man is the smartest man in the movie.
Nazi reminds me, Hitler in this movie.
That's not a statement you can say very commonly, I have to
say. I'm going to use every opportunity I get to say something like that, so I'm not going to let it go. Hitler, the actor who portrayed Hitler in this movie.
Adolf, or the person who played Adolf.
Isn't it funny how many Adolf Hitler
actors there are?
Or people who look exactly like him. I've seen maybe 10 or 12 different actors who try to portray Hitler and they all look like him.
Well, firstly with the mustache, it's not that hard not to.
Charlie Chaplin had that mustache. He doesn't look like Hitler.
If you put on the right garb, attire.
I think it's the tummy as well, like the midsection.
I think it's the hair, the mustache.
Of course.
And the look like you're about to, like, you know, just your
shit
constipated
yourself.
Look.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's good enough. It would have been more interesting, actually, if Hitler was shown to not look like Hitler. Then you know you're, like, really rewriting history. Maybe he's, like, a little bit. Maybe he has, like, spiked hair, you know, like a little, like, handlebar mustache.
Maybe Tarantino should have played Hitler.
Tarantino did have a role in this movie. Do you know what?
No.
He played the hands that were choking Bridget von Hammersmark because, typical Tarantino, actually wanted to choke her because it was going to be a tight shot and he felt like the only way to really bring out the danger of her being choked by supposedly Hans Landa was by actually choking her, and so he didn't trust anybody else to do it. And Diane Kruger must have been like, excuse me, what do you want to do? Do you know I can act, right? I'm an actor. He's like, no, I want to choke you. I'll do it. So the hands, when it's a tight shot, when Hans Landa is choking her, that's Tarantino's hands.
Wow. It's at least better than his role in Django.
The Australian dude with the terrible Australian accent,
yeah.
Who lets Django go. He's bad in all his movies, by the way. He was in Reservoir Dogs as well. He's just terrible in everything.
Do you remember him from Four Rooms?
No, I didn't watch that.
You haven't seen Four Rooms?
No.
Oh, I've realized something about Tarantino. When I saw this movie, I've seen all his movies, obviously. I think he was so good during the 90s. Maybe Jackie Brown was a little, whatever. But everything in the 90s, up until maybe Kill Bill, was just magnificent. He's a very defining director in terms of his style and what he brings to the screen. But I feel like post-Kill Bill, something happened to him, man. And everything he's done after that, he's just been slipping.
No, man. This is a movie he wrote before Kill Bill, by the way. And that's why his hard work came to screen in such a beautiful way. By the way, do you realize only 30% of the movies in English? Like, you watched a basically German and French movie. And still, it doesn't feel that way. You're still as rested. You don't have that typical feeling you have if you watch a movie mostly through subtitles. Because the sheer performances he brings out, the sheer setting, that's just so impressive. He essentially made a German-French-English spaghetti western. And by the way, he was very clear he was making a spaghetti western. So it's like a spaghetti western meets war film. Which is why the first chapter is actually called Once Upon a Time in Nazi-Occupied Germany. You know, that's actually what he wanted to call the film.
He wanted to call it Once Upon a Time in Nazi-Occupied Germany.
Yeah, a little on the nose, but I like it.
You know, there was a Huffington Post article, I think after this movie came out, a little after that maybe, and it was literally titled How the Moral Emptiness of Quentin Tarantino Was Ruining His Movies. And I felt that. I felt that in this movie. And every movie that he's come out with after this as well, Hateful Eight and Django Unchained, there's something that's gone wrong very, very strongly in terms of his mentality, or I think he's just way too many drugs and he needs to stop.
If you're quite done with your armchair pop psychology evaluation of this great man, this artist, this auteur, this great filmmaker, can we go ahead and end this feud? I'm kind of done. I wanna go drink some milk and smoke a giant pipe now.
Yes, please.
Oh, yes?
Oui.
Oh, thanks. Is that you granting permission?
Oui.
Au revoir, Vikram.
Arrivederci. 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 Arrivederci.
So, that was this week's episode of Film Feud. Thank you for listening.
Now, we feuded and you guys get to decide who you think won this week's feud.
You can go on Facebook or Instagram, find us at Film Feud Podcast and let us know who you think won. Or you can find us on Twitter. Go vote at Film Feud Pod.
You can also check out more on munchermedia.com.
You can also let us know what points you might have raised during the feud, if you were feuding, or what movie you would like us to feud next.
Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and leave a rating or review if you liked what you heard.
Or you can find us on CastBox, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, pretty much wherever you find podcasts.
See you guys next week.
Bye-bye.